Welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast, where you'll learn how to structure terms and use various creative financing strategies to create profitable deals for short and long-term wealth. Whether you're a buy and hold investor, wholesaler, or flipper, learning creative financing will help you do more deals and unlock profits that you may not even know existed. On the Creative Financing Podcast, we break down actual deals we and our guests are doing and simplify the methods and terms used to execute these strategies. Now, let's dive in and create some terms.
Hello and welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Gallegos, here with
Jeff Rappaport.
And we will be continuing to talk about lease options today. So we are still in our series of understanding creative financing, all of the strategies. And so this is the last strategy that we're going to talk about. And I know this has been a long series, but hey, we wanted to include everything, right? So if you went back through and just listened to this series, right, in whole, in its entirety, you're going to have a pretty good understanding of the different strategies you can use, examples for using those strategies, the different pros and cons for each of them, title transfer, foreclosure, taxes, due on sale clause, et cetera, et cetera. But if you just went through and listened to this series, you're going to have a pretty good understanding of creative financing. So our last episode, we were talking about wholesaling a lease option. And we had a house that, for example, was worth $550. Jeff got it on a lease option for $505. And with $2,000 down as a option deposit, he found a tenant buyer for $522. With $17,000 down, he gave two of that to the seller, and he took the $15,000 as his wholesale fee, and he was no longer in the middle of it. So now this episode, we're going to talk about master lease option or sandwich lease options, where you stay in the middle of it. So
no sandwich.
Oh, no sandwich.
No sandwich. I don't like sandwich lease options, so okay. We're going to talk master lease options
today. Okay, so what's the difference?
So a sandwich lease option would be, I am going to lease option from you, Jonathan, the owner, and then I'm going to sublet it to someone that's going to live in the property. So I'm going to up the price to my tenant buyer, I'm going to up the rent, and I'm going to up the option deposit. And I'm going to hopefully create three different paydays for myself. But if you remember, on the last episode, we talked about sandwich lease options, and it's just difficult to secure your interest in, you're nowhere in the chain of title, and it's a little bit questionable how you are going to protect yourself to get to that last payday.
Yeah.
And I'd much rather use owner finance if the goal is to stay in the middle. And now you're a note holder. You're the bank. You have a note. That note can be sold if you actually wanted to do that. So you have a lot more options and you are in the chain of title. So today we're going to talk about a master lease option. And this is kind of a more advanced strategy for sure. And we're not going to go into great detail because this is something that you need to be careful about. There needs to be an attorney involved. And two, this is to control bigger assets. And we'll kind of run through an example a little bit. And I just want to give you, I want to plant a seed of what can be, right? So this, you might not be able to walk away from this episode saying, yeah, I know how to do master lease options now, but you will know that, hey, that there's possibilities out there, and you may not have, a whole bunch of money where you can go buy apartment buildings, but you are leveraging your brain and you're figuring out how do you get control of properties for much less money.
Yeah. And that is one of the benefits of lease options, is you can control the property without owning the property.
Yep. So let me set up an example for you. So first of all, using the master lease is better to use on investment properties that have a value add opportunity, which means that the property is not operating in the most efficient manner. And that might be for a number of reasons. It might be because of poor management. It might be deferred maintenance. The rents might be super low. They haven't been raised in years. There might be more vacancy than there should be. Any number of reasons, but we're not looking at doing this on a very efficiently working asset, because there's nothing, I shouldn't say there's nothing to increase, but it will be limited. And you want to approach the properties that have upside, because that upside is going to be hopefully where you're going to make your money.
Okay.
All right. So I'm not even going to go through some commercial things, but let's just create an example here. This is a deal that I was dealing with maybe 2 years ago, and we actually made this offer. And I'll show you why this offer was so good to make in this particular situation. So it's a 20-unit apartment building, okay? 10 one bed, one bath, 10 two bed, one bath, right by a university. So great area. It had four vacancies. There's nothing owed on the property. The owner has owned this property for 30 plus years, and the owner is tired. He does, I shouldn't say he does the management, but he has someone close to him that's doing the management, but he's still very much involved in a lot of the maintenance and repairs. So he's involved in the day-to-day operations. He's an older gentleman. The property's got about $150,000 in deferred maintenance. And some of that is some unit updating, some of it's, you know, replacing a couple of roofs and some windows and that kind of stuff. The owner is leaving this building to his heirs, to his children. And I think there were three of them. And the owner will have a large tax consequence because he's depreciated the property for the maximum of 27 and a half years. So he's completely depreciated it.
He'll have the recapture of that.
That's right.
When he sells.
That's so right.
Depreciation that he took, he'll have to pay that back.
Right. So he's getting no taxable benefit from the property now. But if he sells it, there's going to be a big tax hit. Right. So the heirs would like him to hold on to the property until he dies and just leave it to them in his will. They don't want it. They want the money that can come from it, right? But if they wait, they'll get what's called the stepped up tax basis. So once it's being passed on, the tax bill will be nowhere near what it would be today. So that's what the heirs would like, is for him to hold on to it, keep doing what he's doing until he dies. He's like, I don't want to do this anymore, and I'd like to sell it and be done, so I don't have to, you know, I can go enjoy the rest of my life. Okay.
Yeah.
So we've got a major issue here. But let's look at what things could be done to this property that might be able to increase the value. So rents are below market value. Each unit could be increased by $150 to $250 per unit. Okay. And obviously we could try to fill the four vacant units. we could do the capital expense of the windows and the roofs. We could start to allow pets and charge pet rents and increase the value that way. We could add other amenities that could increase revenue. I don't remember if there was any kind of laundry on site, but there's actually some additional, you know, not a lot of additional land, but you could probably put some storage units, not a lot, but, you know, potentially just for apartment owners that may have other stuff that they just don't have room for. Owner pays for water, sewer, and trash. You could actually bill back some of these expenses to the tenants and collect them from them. Mm-hmm. So there's some ways to increase revenue and or decrease expenses, which increases your net operating income, which is directly correlated to increasing the value of the property. So thus, there are a number of value add opportunities here. Okay.
Yep.
All right. So the offer that we made, so we made him a bunch of owner financing offers. And then it became apparent that, hey, here's the issue. The issue is that if he sells now, he's got a big tax consequence and his heirs don't want him to do that. He wants to be done with the day-to-day operations. And what good would it be for us to lock in a price now? Well, the property is still underperforming, so we're going to lock in a price based on what it's doing now, not what it's capable of doing in the future, right? So if you think about it, it's like buying a rehab. We're buying the property based on how much work it needs plus some, right? We got to have some equity for us to go and rehab a property. We're not just going to a $500,000 home that needs $50,000 in repair. We're not paying $450,000 for, right? So,
yeah.
That's the benefit to us, is to lock in a price now and start working on increasing the value now, so that when the time comes that we have an option to buy a property at one price, but it'd be worth significantly more. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So what we proposed was a master lease option. Okay. And the way that this would work is the seller would receive a certain amount of rent each month. And, that might be the amount of rent that he's collecting now, but you know, he's still got all these expenses. So depending on how you structure it, and you can structure it a number of different ways, that he continues to pay certain expenses like taxes and insurance, which he should, because he's still the owner, right?
Yeah.
Should he also probably pay for the capital expenses like roofs, because roofs didn't, you know, they didn't just wear out in the last month. They've been wearing out over the last 20, 25 years or so. And so, you know, it's probably his responsibility. If the roads needed to be, you know, the parking lot needed to be repaved, that should probably be his responsibility. If furnaces went out, you know, that's probably, again, these are capital expenses, right? But hey, if a tenant tore up the unit, they're moving out, maybe those are not his expenses. Those might be our expenses in terms of being able to do the work and not leaving him with, you know, work to do. So so you figure out how that's going to work. And basically we offered to cover all the expenses except for capital expenses. Mm-hmm. And we talked about fixing some stairs and fixing some roofs right off the bat, right? Because these were more urgent issues and they needed to be addressed. We offered to put, so this property at the time was probably worth, I think our offer was about 1.5, 1.7, something like that. Okay. Now, if this property was working efficiently, it probably was worth closer to $3 million. Okay. 2.8, 3 million. But some money would need to be put in. And it might be $150,000 to $250,000. Okay.
So are those capital repairs?
So there were the roof, the stairs, the windows, those were capital expenses, and that probably would run 100, 80 to 100, I think, somewhere in there is what we figured. And 50 would be units that needed to be updated, that were trashed and never fixed, and then just some general updates as you go, as units become available. Okay, so the seller would continue to pay that. The seller would do all the capital expenses, including the roof and the stairs, right away. Seller no longer needed to be involved in the management, and seller no longer needed management. Okay, because part of what we'll do is we'll collect the monthly payments, we'll handle all the new, we'll do the marketing to generate for any new tenants. We'll do the evictions to get rid of any bad tenants. There's nothing for management to do. We're already working on maintenance and repairs. So a management expense is no longer an issue. So I think he was paying 8%. So he was saving that. So we're going to agree to a price on the property. And like I said, I think it was like 1.7, something like that. And then a time frame of when we have to purchase. Now this was a little bit interesting, because there's no way they wanted us purchasing until he died. And we don't know when he's going to die. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So
no, it's a crystal ball.
Yeah. So we put in that we would agree to buy, or our option would be until 6 months after his passing away. And that, we would be notified that 6 months from the date that we are notified that he had passed away, to exercise our option. Now, if we don't exercise our option during that time frame, then it expires, and we no longer have the right to buy the property. Okay. And in return for all this, we are willing to put up some money to secure this deal. Now, when we talked about lease options in last episode, we talked about giving the seller a very little amount of money. In this case, we probably need to figure out a way to come up with a little more money to, we're offering the seller quite a few things, right? That we're basically saying we'll do all the management and we'll cover the repairs, but in return, you're giving us the right to buy the property at a price today, knowing that it'll be worth
your value add.
That's right. So, yeah. So we offered to pay him
for the upside.
We offered to pay him $80,000 as the option deposit, and the reason that we chose $80,000 is that we felt like he could probably do all the capital expenses with that money, so he wouldn't have to go find it somewhere else. And so that is what we offered. And let's see. So here's how this would all play out, okay? Just so that you get an idea. You gain control of the property. Now, don't you actually have control of this? I mean, you're deciding who lives there, who doesn't, what the rents are, what amenities are offered. This is why you need an attorney involved to make sure that you're not missing anything, because last thing you want is to overlook something. And you put down 80 grand, you've done this for 5 years, you've increased the value, and somehow you miss something, and they can somehow void this contract. You don't want that,
right?
So you've actually gained control of a multi-million dollar property for 80 grand. That is about 3%, right? So any of the money that we paid the seller will actually be applied toward the purchase price. So it's part of our down payment. So now when we make all of these value add, as we start making all of these right, we start increasing the rents, we start adding in, allowing pets and pet rents and all of that. So just by increasing the rents by 275, you're making right now $5,500 a month in income. So if you think about that, let's say that it takes you 6 months to get those four units renovated. Let's say that you're getting, $900 a month, that's an extra $3,600. And now you start increasing the rents, or you've been increasing some of the rents over time. And let's say that for the second 6 months of the year, you make $5,000 a month. You've made $30,000 based on your $80,000 investment. That's about a 40% return on your investment, and that's year one. By the end of year two, you should be made whole. And now, and it's really not about what you're making here, right? It's more about having, that you've increased the value significantly. So you, like I said, everything is negotiable. You can have certain, things that can come up that you don't think that you're responsible for. The seller may think that he's not responsible. You can figure out how those things will be split up. You can have maybe a certain amount of money that you put into the property that also gets applied toward your down payment. The goal would be to have this property worth $1 million+ more than what you're buying it for, in the next 4 or 5 years, and not hoping for this guy to die, but in this case, that's what it was all tied to. And then you can see why, right? That this was kind of the perfect solution to
solving their tax problems.
And
own the property passively, truly passively, because you guys are taking care of all the day-to-day, the maintenance, all that stuff.
If it's just you, this is probably a job, right? That you would be spending a decent amount of time if it's just you. But in reality, but what is it? Once you get things set up, and you find some contractors that can do some handyman work for you, you get all your tenants set up on how to pay each month. What are you doing then? I mean, you're probably going to the property every month, every other month, just to make sure things are moving forward. And so that maybe for a little bit, you've got to spend, quite a bit of time there. But as you start putting processes in place, that this will start moving on your own. Now it's not as much of a job. But can you see, I know people, I know investors that this is the way that they control properties for years. And then when it's time, they exercise their option and they buy, you know, these properties at, you know, and they may have worked out, you know, different kinds of ways to pay down their purchase price over some time, which you could do as well. In this particular case, I knew that the siblings would be, the heirs would not love to see, you know, if there's a price now that, you know, we all want to agree on it, but we don't want that to keep dwindling, right? They're already got in their mind, this is how much money we'll get when dad dies.
Yeah.
So, but
the tax man taking it.
Yeah, not a lot of people use this technique, and there's a lot of moving parts, but if you understand what it is that you're trying to do, I mean, when you talk about a tired landlord, this is perfect, isn't it? Yeah. Yep, they don't necessarily sell. They can start planning for their retirement or their tax consequence or whatever it's going to be. And they don't have to be involved in the day-to-day, and they can eliminate their management company. I mean, that's typically 8 to 10% of gross revenue. And I mean, that's a significant expense to them. And by the way, I'm using that to negotiate the rent that we're offering the seller, right? I want to see what you're netting now. And I want to see, hey, if I can get, you know, in that range, and now you don't have to do anything. Think you kind of have to consider it.
Yeah, and save that management fee.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Well, this is really cool. Did you end up getting that deal?
So what they decided, which made almost no sense, is that they were going to wait. So we have like a first right of refusal on this property. Unfortunately, that by the time that they come back to us, who knows what kind of condition it'll be in, and who knows what the price will be. So no, we didn't end up getting it, and we had it except for one of the heirs. One of the sons was trying to do something and trying to do it with storage units, and so the seller wanted to just hold off and see if they could make it happen. To be honest, we should probably go back to this guy and see where they're at right now.
Yeah.
Just because everyone liked the deal except for this one son who was trying to do something based on, I don't even know how he was going to do it. Now, he didn't own the property. I really have no idea what he was trying to do, but they had their attorney involved, and the father reluctantly said he had to give his son a chance to figure it out. So,
yeah, gotcha. Huh. Interesting. Yeah, this is a very creative strategy to be able to make income, be able to find a property, control that property, and you know, fix that property up or add value to it by decreasing expenses or increasing income, and then taking advantage of that when you actually exercise the option. Because I mean, if this thing went on for 20 years, you could, you know, you had 80,000 into it. Mm-hmm. Plus, you know, the cost of fixing up some of the units. But, you know, by the end of that term, when you buy the property, I mean, you may not have to pull anything out of your own pocket, right? If you've increased the value based on value add, and there's been significant appreciation, I mean, you may not have to pull any money out of your pocket to buy the property.
Well, you would if you're still considering it as a lease option. But you bring up a super good point, because maybe one of the things that you try to do probably wouldn't have worked in this case, but in other cases, it just may. What if I said, I'm going to do this for the next 5-7 years. Okay. Whatever the amount of time is.
Yeah.
At the end of 5 years, if I have gotten, you know, such and such, you know, I'm bringing in such and such revenue, or, you know, I can bring another $100,000 down that you finance me, even if it's contract for deed, right? Even if it's a land contract where I don't go on title for 12 months, okay? So that we've taken our lease option and maybe we've got something in there based on, you know, reaching certain milestones or being able to put down more money that, that you now put me, you now give me ownership, right?
Yeah.
And we do it for, let's say, 12 to 18 months, whatever we can get. And then we will pay you off. Well, now you're again doing it as a refinance, right? And then doing it as a refinance allows you to use the value of what the property is, not the purchase price. So
I see what you're saying.
So you know, if we were still, let's say the property is now worth $3 million, okay, and we were going to buy it for 1.7 and we got 80 grand as a down payment, so more than likely that we still got to qualify for a loan. We got to be able to buy this. We're going to need 20-25% down. You know, that's going to be $340,000 to, you know, $425,000, something like that.
Yeah.
That we would still, minus the 80, right? Cause we'll get credit for that. But we would still need to do that. And the value will only just make it easier for us to qualify. It doesn't allow us to get in light or with no money.
No.
But if we own it, and we own it for a year, year and a half, now we could actually say, hey, we want to refinance. And now they're going to take it based on the $3 million evaluation. And but let's say that they'd only lend 70% at that point.
Yeah.
They'd still lend 2.1 or 2 million. Actually we could pay them off, have no money in it, and actually maybe even pull money out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. I see what you're saying. So the difference between
there are a lot of little nuances here that you can look at, but, and by the way, works on storage units, works on mobile home parks, RV parks,
single family office, homes.
Anything that has a value add opportunity to it.
Yeah. And, or, I know one of the popular strategies right now is to, find single family homes that you can do a master lease on, and then, you know, putting those homes on Airbnb.
And, oh yeah. Right.
Yeah. So that's another example of the master lease.
Yep.
That's actually a popular strategy right now. Cause there's courses on these, on this, right? Finding people who are just renting the property out, talking to them, saying, hey, I'd like to do a master lease, letting them know that you're going to use it as a short-term rental property, and Airbnb it all the way. So,
yeah. That's an excellent point. One of the reasons that we've really never talked about that is that I kind of stay away from that kind of stuff. But if I was going to do it, that's exactly the way I would do it.
Yeah.
Now you haven't bought a property based on, getting three times the amount of market rate rent because you're going to Airbnb it.
Yeah.
Where, you know, the regulations, you know, there's regulations in every city about that.
Yeah.
And if they change and you're out of luck, I don't think I want to have bought the property and overpaid for it, most likely.
Yeah.
To now be able to just go straight rent it.
Yeah.
But doing it your way, it's like, hey, yeah. Everyone prospers until there's no reason to prosper. And then I just here you go. You can have your property back.
Yeah. And how easy is it to sell that? Hey, Mr. Landlord, I'd like to sublease your property to short-term tenants who are going to stay in there 1 to 2 days. And then the property will be cleaned immediately after, and they will be charged for any damages immediately if they were to damage the property after their stay. Like, you know, with short-term tenants, the property is going to be taken better care of most likely than long-term tenants who might have pets and kids that destroy the property over time, and you have to replace carpet, et cetera, et cetera. Right.
Yep. So, and more than likely you can offer even a slightly higher rent than they would have been getting before. And then again, eliminate all the management. So they're increasing their revenue, they're decreasing their expenses, and they, you know, someone else is responsible for it all.
Yeah. Yep.
Yep. Exactly. Exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
Maybe a few more moving parts in some of these commercial properties, but
yeah,
same kind of thing. I mean, wouldn't you, I mean, if you were looking to do this long-term on a house, wouldn't you want to know who's covering the roof, if the roof needs to be replaced or stuff like that? You'd want to look at the more capital expenses and make sure you know who's responsible for what.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you're trying to do a master lease for Airbnbs, you don't want to be responsible for roofs and capital repairs. You just don't want that to be on your horizon.
Yeah. So you probably want to rent it without the responsibility of any capital expense. All the minor stuff, you know, was probably you know, holes in the walls and, paint and stuff like that, you know, clogs in the plumbing to some degree, you'd probably be fine with, but all the major repairs probably need to still be with the seller.
Yeah, right. Well, cool. I hope that opens your guys' minds up to some creative ways of using lease options, especially master leases, where you can sublease the property and you have fixed lease, monthly lease in place, that you're not responsible for any major capital repairs. You can control the property, add value by increasing rents or charging pet fees or billing back utilities, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, this is super creative. Do you know guys that do this, Jeff?
Yeah, I do. I do. And to be honest, it's something that I am looking at doing as well. And the real question for me right now is, do I want to make it part of my LOI or make my offers on the LOI and then have it as my backup if they didn't accept any of my offers? So I'm playing around with it right now.
Yeah. I don't know. That's, you could put it on there and roll the dice or.
And I'm the one that put together that,
wait a minute, what if we did this?
Yeah. I'm the one that put together the detailed offer that we just went through. And yeah, I had no experience doing that. And
yeah,
I did a little research and found out a few things, and I actually reached out to a few people that I knew were doing it. And even though you got to be careful detail wise, but a super good way. I mean, if you don't have money, but you have the time and you understand how to improve revenue, right, or decrease expenses, both, that you could set yourself up with a couple of deals. A couple of deals a year could really set yourself up. Plus, you know what it does is it allows you time to go find partners if you need it, or raise money, because you're able to show them what you're doing over time.
Yeah. So,
that makes it a very good, solid way of getting deals that maybe you wouldn't be able to get.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, yeah, provides a solution to some of these owners out there that are tired of managing. They depreciate their property entirely across 27 and a half years, and they don't want the major tax consequences, but they don't want to be involved in the day to day.
Yep.
So,
well, and you know what might be a good way to, you know, maybe these owners are like, yeah, I probably should do a 1031, but you know, I just don't really want to go find the deal. Well, hey, I'm a deal finder. So why don't we do this for the next 3 years, and let's see over the next 3 years what we're able to find you. And let's just agree that, hey, you're going to give me a year at least to, you know, create some value here. And then I'll start bringing you some deals that you can look at. And, you know, hopefully now we'll match things up, right?
That, yeah, possibly do 1031.
Yeah, find you the deal and I'll buy the property.
And I'll master lease it.
Right. Yeah.
See, that could just be a perpetual thing.
Yeah. Well, could you imagine? I mean, if you can make $1 million in equity on your first deal, and then maybe bring a good deal to them and make another $100,000, maybe on like a wholesale.
Yep.
That's pretty around, good.
And then turn around and master lease that.
Yeah, true, right?
For them, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
Maybe. I mean, you could, if you had a working relationship and you proved it to a seller, and you did it on their property. I mean, yep. Anyway, I guess you can go down a lot of roads with master lease.
No, and like I said, yeah, this wasn't going to be like, okay, now I know how to go do this. What it should do is like, whoa, what are the possibilities with this?
Yeah. And I remember we actually talked about this before on an episode. I can't remember, but
it was a while ago.
Yeah. I remember just being like, wow, I've never even heard of that. And that is so cool. Super creative. And you can make a lot of money doing it.
Yep.
Plus create some equity. So
totally agree.
Cool. Well, guys, I hope you've enjoyed this series. We'll wrap it up here.
Series is over, Jonathan. I think we did 13, maybe 12 or 13.
Yeah. Yeah. So this will be the last one in the series. But hey, we went over all of the strategies. We gave examples for all of the strategies. We went over the pros and cons of all the strategies. So like I said earlier, if you just go through and listen to this series, you'll have a pretty good understanding of creative financing and how to use it.
Awesome.
Okay, guys. Well, you can get a hold of us on Facebook. Join the Facebook group at the Creative Financing Podcast. So if you haven't gone on there yet, definitely do that so you can connect with like-minded individuals and help each other do deals, right? And if you guys want to check out our archive, it's on the creativefinancingpodcast.com. If you guys are interested in Jeff's apprenticeship program, where you know, it's a wholesaling based program nationwide, where he teaches you how to put together deals that we were just talking about and that we talk about on every one of our podcasts, reach out to Rebecca. You can email her at rebecca@weofferoptions.com. And lastly, if you guys want to learn creative financing, then get more information about the Creative Financing Academy. Get into it, dive in. It's a video-based course where you sit, it's like sitting right beside Jeff as he pulls leads out of his CRM and shows you how he creates offers on them, and the reasoning behind them and how the numbers work, et cetera, et cetera. So if you want a taste of that, just email Jeff at weofferoptions.com for a teaser video of it. And if you like that video, then definitely get in to the Academy. So any last words there, Jeff?
Nope. I think hopefully you enjoyed this series. Hopefully it was informative for you. We gave lots of examples, and again, don't get overwhelmed. Pick one strategy, maybe two, and start using it in your business and start building on it. Don't try to be able to understand it all and be able to use it all at once. It'll just overwhelm you.
Yeah. Yeah. Great point. It really does. I mean, start with one strategy. And once you completely understand that and you start utilizing that, then go with another one. I mean, that's how you eat an elephant, right?
That's right.
One bite at a time, so to speak. But hey guys, till next time, go out there and create some terms.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Financing Podcast. We need your feedback to continue to bring you the best strategies in creative financing. So please subscribe, rate, and review this show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. We greatly appreciate your ear, and please pass this on. Until next time, create some terms. This show offers general information on creative financing strategies and real estate investments. Nothing contained herein should be considered personal, legal, or financial advice. Every state has individual laws governing the use and type of documents used to execute strategies discussed herein. You should consult with a local licensed real estate broker and attorney before relying on any information contained herein. Information is not guaranteed, and opinions of the guests are their own. Profits are not guaranteed, and there's always inherent risk in real estate investing.